Hey there, this is the Hello Personality Podcast, the place where you'll learn how to use your personality type to create a radically authentic life that ignites your potential and creates positive ripple effects for all of those around you. I'm Leslie McDaniel, and this is Season 3, Episode 10, and we're continuing our series of interviews with people of different personality types. In these interviews that I'm doing, we're learning about their journey to finding their best fit type in the 16-type system, and we're also hearing about how they relate to each element of the Authentic Life framework and how those elements show up in their lives. This is the framework that we've been talking about this season on the podcast, and you can go back and check out Season 3, Episodes 1 through 6, if you want to better understand this framework. So today we have Andrea, who is an ISFJ in the 16-type system. Andrea lives with her husband Seth in southern Pennsylvania, and as a personality type consultant for Personality Hacker, she finds it rewarding to help people gain clarity and insight through the lens of typology. Since childhood, she has been fascinated with human behavior and psychology. She also enjoys baking, researching health and nutrition, and engaging in conversations with friends on a variety of topics. Similar to Mary Joy, who we met two episodes ago in episode 8, I met Andrea during my personality profiling training courses and program. Andrea and I both became accredited personality hacker profilers at the same time. One of the things I love about Andrea is her ability to methodically gather information in order to come to a careful understanding of not only who she is, but what she has experienced in her lifetime. Andrea's type journey has gone from INFJ, which she related to for a while, to ISFJ. So we're going to talk about this process as well as her cognitive function sequence and how it's different from an INFJ's. We're going to talk about the differences in the functions like introverted intuition, or NI as it's called, that all NJ types use, myself included, and introverted sensing, or SI, that all SJ types use. If you find that you're not familiar with some of the terms that we're going to use in this interview, that's totally okay, and I think you can still get a lot out of our conversation. But if you do want to understand more about the functions that we're going to discuss, I encourage you to go back and listen to Season 1, Episodes 9 through 11. Andrea is our representative for the IJ types, and as an ISFJ, she obviously cannot represent all IJ types, which also include INFJs, INTJs, and ISTJs. However, there are still some key patterns and themes of all IJ types that you'll also hear from Andrea. And some of these include having a comfort zone, and she'll talk a little bit about having her lane, which can be kind of narrow, and not having much ability to improvise in the moment. And the thought of improvising or not being prepared or knowing what's coming really is avoided at all costs because it can be pretty terrifying to an IJ type. Keep in mind that all IJ types have an introverted perceiving process as their first function in their cognitive function sequence. So this means that Andrea and other IJs will understand things by spending a lot of time interacting with their internal world. And this means that she'll generally spend more time gathering information than EJs or IPs who both lead with a decision-making or judging process. And she's going to be slower to action than EPs because they're extroverts. All IJ types have their judging functions in the middle of their sequence, so there will be some bouncing back and forth between Andrea's feeling and thinking functions, even though her overall preference for feeling will tend to win out between the two. Okay, so I'll be back again after the interview to add a few more thoughts, but let's go ahead and dive in. Hey, Andrea, welcome to the Hello Personality Podcast. Thank you so much for being here and being part of this interview series. I really appreciate it.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to start off by just talking a little bit about your typing journey and how you came across the 16-type system and how you landed on your best fit type of ISFJ and maybe any pit stops that you had along the way.
Yeah, well, when I think about how I got interested in it, in personalities in general, I think about when I was a teenager, I came across a book that was actually talking about the four personalities. And that was very, very fascinating to me. And I loved it and wanted to, you know, figure everyone out around me and, you know, always wanted to talk about it with one of my best friends. And then there was kind of a gap. And at some point, probably around 2017, 18, somewhere like that, I was starting to get interested in it again. And I came across Personality Hacker and started listening to their podcast. And I had some trouble identifying my type at first. And then I did land on, I thought INFJ worked best for me. And as I just kept discovering more about personalities, a lot of it kept seeming to line up. I went through Personality Hacker's training and met a lot of great people along the way and learned more about myself and about personalities. And it just kept being a deep fascination to me. So then after a number of years into it, like I did start to wonder, like it was a gradual process of where I started to wonder if INFJ was my best fit type. And there was a lot of mental challenges to overcome, mental and emotional, where it's like, you know, you learn to see yourself a certain way through a lens of a personality and you interpret things through it and everything. And so it does take, it's a huge switch to start to think differently about yourself or even consider could something else line up better, because I had so many things that lined up really well with INFJ. And, you know, I had misconceptions and stereotypes around ISFJ. So, but it was, I did start to wonder if, I noticed little things that didn't seem to maybe quite fit with INFJ. I realized I was probably more tuned into the sensing world than I realized, and noticing facts and details and trying to make sure that my, you know, if I made a leap or I made a guess that it was backed up by something, and, you know, where's the evidence to back that up? And I just noticed things like that. I did know that I tend to need a lot of like physical world organization. And although I could see plenty of ways, you know, my life and my house could be more organized, it was still something, you know, I did have my areas. I had my little, you know, systems of organization. And so then I was talking to, I mean, part of my journey too was being able to talk to INJs and INFJ and a couple INTJs and just understanding how much they can struggle with physical world organization. Because for them, it's a lot more of mentally organizing patterns and perceptions, but it's a lot, they often would struggle with like real world planning and organization. And so, yeah, it took some time and conversations with patient people. And I was able to gradually, like I did realize it fit better, but I also had to let go of, in order to accept ISFJ and see myself and how I might fit that lens, I had to let go of stereotypes or misconceptions I had around it. Because, you know, when I first started getting into understanding personalities and the functions, the cognitive functions, everything, introverted sensing or SI, which would be the dominant function for ISFJ, it seemed boring. I struggled to understand what it was doing, like what is actually happening. Okay, they remember their past, but like, you know, what's going on here? And so it was really weird to start considering, could that even be my dominant function? But it is so true that a lot of times our dominant function is like water to a fish and we don't even see it. Like we don't realize how much we're doing it, how much it's part of the way we relate and think and all that. So it was definitely mind-blowing to realize, you know, I think this is literally the water to me and I wasn't seeing it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's so, so true. I think, you know, it's the reason why so many people are mistyped, including myself, you know, and so many of our classmates, you know, that we went through our programs with ended up with a different best fit type, because that first function is just so common and it's difficult to see, you know. It's like we need something almost to reflect that back to us. You mentioned the word gradually a couple times as you were speaking, and I think that seems pretty key to the way that your introverted sensing that you mentioned works, that you kind of need to gather a lot of evidence over time, as you mentioned. Is that true for you, to be
yes.
able to be certain of something?
Yes, yes, that's very true. It is a gradual process, and it's definitely a, you know, process that ruminates on things and goes over everything. And yeah, just all the experiences or even the information and experiences of others, I'll take it in and just consider it, look at it. And yeah, do I have evidence? Like, that was definitely one thing I was looking at, is like, okay, what would, if I was an ISFJ, what would fit that, you know, do I have the facts here to prove it? And that is definitely part of SI. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So can you take us through an example of like what that's like for you when you're going through all the things in your mind to try to make sure that it works? I don't know if that's something you can translate to us, but as best as you could, like, what does that look like and what does it sound like, or how does that work for you?
So yeah, definitely one part of SI is doing a lot of, is being careful, I guess. Careful would be a good angle mm-hmm. to think of SI on. And so if I'm learning something new, or like even my process around understanding personalities and becoming a profiler, helping people find their type, I need to gather a lot of evidence, and I need to even reflect on every experience is like something you try to draw the most out of. So, you know, say I come back from a trip, or I come back from an experience that, you know, might have had a lot packed into it. I didn't have as much time to think about, you know, for the next week or so, like things will just keep coming up unconsciously, and I'll be thinking about that. And even as I'm thinking about stuff, I'll make new patterns, new connections. And I'll be like, oh, I think that was going on. Oh, okay. I think in that situation, it might've been better to do this, or that's what that person was meaning. Okay. So, and I can learn from it. That's a big part of SI, is like learning mm-hmm. as you're ruminating. Part of what you're trying to understand is how to avoid mistakes in the future, or learn from the past so that you can take that into your next experiences and you don't have to repeat the same mistakes. Like, that's just something I do not like doing at all. And so, you know, you try to glean what you can from your experiences and things people told you, or, you know, podcasts I've listened to. It's just, and it's kind of this unconscious process. It just comes up at any time of the night or day. And hopefully that illustrates some of it.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the things that, as I learned, you know, have been learning about personality types over the years with introverted sensing, your dominant function, is that, you know, the amount of information that you gather over your lifetime by doing this, that you've just described, this process of ruminating and kind of culling all the information, like, it can make you, as you get older, actually quite adaptable or resilient to different things, because you've had so many different experiences that you've learned from and you've incorporated them into yourself. Is that part of your experience as well?
Yeah. I feel like so. I mean, you know, I have hopefully many more decades to keep learning, but I do think that, yes, especially when, you know, it doesn't even have to be something I've immediately learned or that I have tons of experience in, but if I have even some kind of familiarity with something, or I've heard of it, or I had one little taste of it, like, it definitely helps going into like new experiences in the future, like to adapt and to, you know, if I've heard of something or seen it before, it just feels a lot different than like a completely brand new experience. Everything new and nothing to connect to, like, that can feel very unsettling.
Yeah, a little bit of maybe a freak out if there's a new experience that you've never had before and you kind of don't have anything to connect it to. Is that what it's like for you?
Yes. And looking for something to connect to, you know, is like, is someone going to be there that I know? Is like, can I relate this to something? And, you know, again, like, I didn't even realize that I was doing this. It's just, yeah, it's just kind of the natural way that my mind works. So,
yeah. And I would imagine that you related to some of the things about INFJs because you're both an IJ. And so there are some similar patterns and similar ways that INFJs and ISFJs relate to the world. So what are some of those overall IJ things that are different than other types, kind of uniquely IJ things?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of things I felt like I related to NI, which now I realize I think it's a lot of SI with some of the NE. You know, I have an intuitive part as well. Yeah. But yeah, so the IJs tend to, they all tend to prefer their familiarity, their comfort zones, I would say it's not because you have that extroverted perceiving function at the bottom, whether that's extrovert sensing or extroverted intuition. There is that desire to know what to expect, to know what's coming, to be able to predict. Like I definitely related to being, you know, looking at the future and what can I expect, what's coming. But the way I was figuring that out was definitely more of a, you know, past experiences, connections I've made about past things or something I've read about, rather than being like, general pattern, this overarching pattern that like just will explain what will happen in the future. Like it's, yeah, so it's much more detail conscious. And I think also another thing with IJs is that they tend to like to find a lane or two and more stay in it. They kind of find their place to specialize in. They kind of find their area of focus and they stay in that. And there's not near as much of this need for like a lot of different options or a lot of different broad variety of experiences, like, you know, EP types might have more of that, even EJ types and IP, just because of where their extroverted perceiving process is located. So those are some similarities coming up for me right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned that with introverted intuition, it's more the comfort they seek is more in that pattern or that overall concept that the potential future scenario can fit into. And if they have that, then they feel like, okay, I can handle what's coming. For you, it's looking back and trying to find those details of things, those touchstones of things that you are familiar with. Is that accurate for you?
Yeah, I used to think of SI as being a lot more of a intentional or conscious process where you're like deliberately being like, did I see this before? And it's not so much this kind of wooden comparison where it's more of a, it's actually just, if I have like an instinct of like, I think I've seen this before, I've put patterns together. Like it still kind of feels like patterns to me, but it's just more of an instinct of like, oh, I think I know how this is going to go. But it really does come from my experiences or others' experiences I've heard or read. And that can help me predict the future. So yeah, it's a lot more grounded in like real world experiences maybe, and not so much of this conceptual pattern to explain the future like NI would be.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And it's totally understandable that you would see the relationship and connect to what you thought NI was doing. And NI and SI are very similar in a lot of ways. Just like SE and NE, for example, or extroverted sensing and extroverted intuition. So we talked a little bit about your dominant function, introverted sensing, and we talked a little bit about that inferior function of extroverted intuition, but let's talk a little bit more about that since it's the exact opposite of your introverted sensing. And you also really, for a while, really related to being intuitive, and you do have this intuitive side that shows up. So I'm curious, how do you see your NE showing up in your life?
Yeah, I feel like I have a pretty strong connection to, you know, the inferior, but I think that's also everybody, most personalities that I talk to, like they really like their inferior function and whatever it is. And so one of the ways, like I'll talk about some positives and some, you know, struggle points it can bring up for me. And one of the positives is that I do have a real love of understanding and exploring a lot of different ideas. Like there is this variety that still comes up for me, like you would hear from, you know, ENPs who use extroverted intuition as a dominant function. Like they enjoy a lot of variety. I do too in some ways. So I actually have a lot of different topics I enjoy. I can get very creative in within my field that I've studied a lot in, or like, you know, maybe in the kitchen, I enjoy cooking and baking. And you know, I don't near follow a recipe to the T. You know, I'm very like, you know, experimental, but it's within areas that like I have a lot of experience and expertise in, and I'm confident. And then I enjoy experimenting and enjoy exploring, like I said, like a wide field of ideas. And I can enjoy psychology or like personalities. You might think of those as being more intuitive, but sensors have a lot to bring as well. And so for me, I'm like always being like, does this pattern show up in reality? You know, am I seeing this? Mm-hmm. Is there evidence? Or is this just a nice sounding pattern that, you know, it just sounds good, you know? So I'm always trying to like look at how that might show up in reality. So yeah, those are a couple ways that I can definitely enjoy it and can have my moments where, you know, maybe within the box of SI can get, you know, playful or, yeah, more just creative or even maybe silly, you know, that's going to be within a certain box mm-hmm. around people I'm familiar with. So yeah, those are a couple positives. And then I guess some negatives would be, it really is true that, at least from my experience, that anxiety can definitely is coming from a lot of that inferior NE. And for me, how that looks is, you know, generally I'm not usually missing the details or, you know, I'm noticing all this stuff, but then I always have this desire to understand how it connects or what explains it. Why is this happening? What is going on there? And it's not immediately obvious to me sometimes. And so that can bring up a lot of anxiety. Like what's going on? What's causing that? Is there something that could be coming? And, you know, one of the things I've been processing lately is just how much, because of the position of where SI is, I'm leading with SI and then having some of this NE in there, I will hear of experiences people have had that are really negative or dark or horrifying, you know, these awful experiences, and your SI is taking them in because they're actual real experiences. But then they kind of go into this little bucket of like things now that might happen or could happen. And so it's not like this just crazy thing that never has happened. It actually has happened. So that's definitely something, even if I like logically know about that and I'm like, yeah, so this is probably very unlikely. It's still very hard to deal with it because like, but it has happened or there's a possibility it could. So that's definitely, you know, times when I'm feeling, you know, more stressed out or, in more unfamiliar territory, that's when the inferior NE can come up and start to be a lot more, negative and be more of the worrying, it goes down the worrying road a lot more often in those scenarios.
Yeah, like kind of like thinking of catastrophic things that could,
yes,
like it's a possibility because it has happened. I love that.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so you also talked about how you can be creative or explore some different topics, but it's kind of within a safe container, it sounds like. And that's often the way I think our inferior function works. And I even heard you kind of light up a little bit as you were talking about your NE. And so I love that too, because I think that's true. You know, I think a lot of times when we begin to study personality type, we think, oh, that inferior function is something you don't like and it never shows up and it's just completely off your radar, which is not true. Those of us who've studied a lot and worked with people, we see it come up quite a lot. So I love that. Thank you for demonstrating that for us too.
Yes.
So we've talked about your introverted sensing, your first function and your cognitive function sequence and your extroverted intuition, the last function. So let's talk a little bit about those two functions in the middle, which would be extroverted feeling as your second and introverted thinking as your third. How do you see these two playing out in your life?
Yeah, because of where they're located in the function stack, they definitely are something I'm very aware of. I would say probably more conscious of than even the dominant function and the inferior. So yeah, for me, extroverted feeling looks like being aware of how other people might take something, noticing how people are feeling, noticing connections, relationships, connections between people, and then balancing that, and also how I might fit into a group or even what I think of a group, which is where the introverted thinking comes in, is like, you know, does it make sense to me? Being aware of beliefs, my beliefs, other people's beliefs, you know, to me, the introverted thinking and the extroverted feeling play very seamlessly together in that they're looking at beliefs and how it's relating to how a group's connecting. You know, if you have similar beliefs or this is going to help people connect better. And yeah, those are some things that are coming up for me.
Yeah. I would suspect too, there might be a sense of, because you do have overall preferences for feeling, you know, your extroverted feeling is more of a preference than the introverted thinking, at least in the way the system's organized, but you're an introvert, right? So you're going to rely on that introverted thinking a lot. So I would imagine there can be even a sense of criticism about what maybe is not going well in a group or maybe things that are interrupting the harmony of the group or the vibe of the group. Has that come up for you as well?
I mean, yeah, I will notice that. I also feel like because of that introverted thinking being so balanced, I definitely use introverted thinking a lot as well. And I also have this appreciation for people being able to be themselves. And, you know, you have to do what makes sense to you. You know, there's like that awareness of like, there's a value of individuality as well. And how, you know, there needs to be this fine balance between where the group can't, you know, ask you to give up your, you know, individuality. But also there's a way that when we come together, we can connect. And some of that might mean, especially for the time being, you know, that we do have certain social rules that foster harmony between mm-hmm. people. But yeah, it is very interesting. I feel like that is where different people who use extrovert feeling will come out in different places on that. You know, you might have people that are much stronger on the group and how the group needs to take precedence. And yeah, you're going to have some variation there, but yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like there's a little bit of tension though, even for you, as far as like what the group's doing, but also, as you call it, your individuality, which sounds like it is coming from that, that introverted judging function, which often gives us a sense of identity. And for you, it's around what you believe and being able to think what you think. Separate from what everyone else is thinking. Is that true for you?
Yes, yes. And having, you know, being free to have your opinions or, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely interesting to consider the balance. And I don't feel like I always have the easiest time finding my role in a group or fitting into a group. There's a lot of tension there with my relationship to groups and cultures. So it's definitely interesting because although I desire to find, you know, community or deep relationships, that's always something that I value and have valued. There's also this tension that, like, you know, I have to be able to also be myself, be true to my beliefs, find what makes sense to me. So yeah, it's always dealing with that tension. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that just demonstrates the tension between all functions that are opposite, you know, even your SI and NE in a way, even though the tension is much more imbalanced, it still exists, you know, and they never operate in isolation from each other.
Yes, that's very true. They're always, it's kind of learning to integrate them into each other rather than having them operate separately.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So what would you say? I know you mentioned earlier that you kind of thought ISFJs were boring or introverted sensing was boring, which I've heard that too. I think it's such a terrible perspective because all personality types and all functions have something beautiful to bring to the world. But what would you say in your mind are some of the biggest misconceptions that people have about ISFJs or maybe even IJs in general?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because I do feel like there are, as there are with a lot of the personality types, there's a lot of stereotypes and that can keep people from finding their personality, their accurate personality, because those stereotypes don't seem like them. Or as in my case and a lot of people I talk to, like you might know someone that is a certain personality. Like I saw ISFJs around me and I was like, what? I'm not like them. Like there's even like plenty of times I'm like, you know, might have trouble connecting or might have trouble, you know, well, we have different interests. So like, you know, finding a common thing to talk about might feel difficult, but that doesn't mean I'm not an ISFJ. You know, there's quite a variety even within a type. And if you look specifically at the introverted sensing function, that is definitely something that, we are going to be very different based on because we are taking in the experiences of the culture we grew up in, our family, even the time period that you grow up in, your different influences, you know, who your mom and dad were and the culture of your family. And so you're going to be different. There's going to be a variety between ISFJs and, you know, I saw all the different things that I had put in the SI box that I didn't like. You know, I had this stereotype that, oh, they're probably good with like crocheting or knitting or sewing or these like detailed work, which I didn't always, you know, I never liked that, you know, and specifically like needlework stuff. I didn't like that. And so there's plenty of details like I don't enjoy or I haven't invested in getting good at that. Also, I think there's a stereotype that you never change maybe everything that you were taught when you were growing up. Like you never change the way you think about that. You never make major changes. You just kind of stay maybe where you grew up, stay in the same culture, whatever. And that isn't true either. There's definitely ISFJs that your life journey can take you different places. And SI is more of a non-judgmental function because it is that perceiving function. So it's kind of taking in your experiences and seeking to understand them. And then it's going to be your decision-making functions like the FE or the TI that actually come up with like, well, how do I think about this? What makes sense for me and what am I going to do with this? I think those are some things that people will see ISFJs or SI dominance as not being open to different, not being open to new, and that isn't completely true. There may be some ISFJs people might see that seem to fit the stereotype, but there's definitely even those ISFJs, there's more to them than the stereotypes, and there's plenty that don't seem to immediately line up with your first idea of an ISFJ.
Yeah. I think you also demonstrated something that's really beautiful about SI in that you understand the impact of your family and your culture and your upbringing and all these different factors that are unique to each individual, as you said. So you can kind of see the influence in all of those things in molding you as an individual, which I think is something pretty unique to SI. Would you say that's true for you?
Yeah, I think that's something that SI probably has more on their radar, maybe. I mean, I think other types can come to that conclusion as well, but I think that does feel natural maybe to understand that. And I think that's also some of what can make it help an ISFJ or ISTJ be accepting of like a variety of people, because like we all have different experiences. And so, yeah, that is definitely true that you understand that people's life stories shape them in different ways. And so people show up differently.
Yeah. And I think especially you were talking about there are some ISFJs maybe who don't change, but many who do. And I think you demonstrating the integration of some of your NE, or at least understanding yourself through the lens of your personality type in this system, helps you to kind of see where you can become more well-rounded, more integrated, and be able to change over time as you beautifully are capable of doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think getting a variety of experiences, even that your SI brings that into you, into your inner world, also helps that as well. Like, yeah, it's definitely the SI and the NE working together for sure.
Yeah. So I'd like to switch gears just a little bit and talk about the Authentic Life Framework that I've been covering here on the podcast this season. And I'd like for the listener to really hear about some of your strengths and struggles when it comes to some of the aspects of the Authentic Life Framework that we're going to be talking about. So when it comes to the first element of this framework, it's consciousness. And just a reminder for our listeners, this is defined in our framework here as the state of being aware of how you're showing up, how you're interacting with the world, being able to understand and see the filters through which you view the world, understanding your triggers and some of your automatic patterns of behavior. So I'm curious for you, as an IJ or as an ISFJ, Andrea, how easy or difficult is it for you to see some of these things in your life? And how has your personality type helped you to identify these things?
I think that because SI is noticing and observing a lot of different aspects of my experiences, my responses to things, and other people as well, and just learning about, I feel like I've always been fascinated, like, you know, what makes me tick, what makes other people tick. And so I think that is something that I do observe and notice, like triggers or responses, or like, okay, I responded that way there. That, you know, there's probably something else going on there that wasn't like, that didn't match the situation. My response maybe didn't match the situation. So there's probably something going on. It's like, Yeah, I think that is something that I definitely tend to notice and observe a lot. And I also think understanding my personality type has definitely given me a framework to kind of understand and notice things that maybe it would have even taken me longer to realize how much I tend to be that way or something. So yeah, personality type has helped a lot.
It's definitely a very effective tool for that purpose. And I think even as you described earlier in our conversation, the fact that you're sort of ruminating over things and identifying, like trying not to make the same mistakes or have the same issues again in the future, seems like that would also be a definite benefit when it comes to identifying your triggers and patterns and maybe things that aren't actually working well for you in your life.
Definitely. I think that is something that, you know, I've tended to do naturally, at least the noticing part. Yeah.
Yeah. And being an introvert too, right? You're spending a lot of time in your inner world and going over these things. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk about the second part of the framework, which is clarity. And whereas this consciousness that we've just been talking about is more of an ongoing process and an ongoing state of noticing, like we've just talked about, clarity starts to get into the specifics of these. And it's being able to translate what you observe with what you should do about it and some meaning and next steps. And I'm curious, when it comes to your relationship with clarity, either knowing what you believe or what you want in your life or understanding these self-observations, like what strengths and struggles do you have that you think might be related to your type?
Yeah, I think that trying to get at least, clarity, the way I think about it, trying to get down to the specifics, trying to understand, like maybe you have this broad idea of like, oh, I want to do something I like to do. Like, you know, it is natural for me to ask questions of myself and others, you know, okay, can you give me an example of that? Or how would you see that working out? Like kind of getting down to the specifics, the clarity of it. That is something that I think I tend to have a drive to want to do is, you know, break it down, not just keep it in this more of a vague, vague world, you know, bring it to make it clear. But then I think sometimes there are areas of the way you're defining this that, like knowing what to do with what you've observed, I think that might be something that might come a little bit harder or require a little bit more processing. But once I've identified something and become clear about it, then I usually can come up with several, you know, maybe several options to try to work towards that.
Yeah. And would you say, does it feel like it takes a while just because that the way that introverted sensing works and that it's a very slow process? Or is it something else that makes you feel that it kind of takes a while for that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, well, and the fact that I'm an introvert as well, like if it is like, hey, taking an action or, and that might relate to the next part as well, but being aware of like, okay, if I say I want to do that, that's going to require me to take action. So like there is that hesitating of like where I will think something through before I even commit to something, just because I'm aware of what it might require of me. And yeah, I think SI is also a slow process and just it takes some time to sort everything out.
Yeah. So the third part is confidence. And I define confidence as having the willingness to step into the unknown, to take new actions, to get new results, and to acknowledge the gifts that you bring into the world. So confidently bring those into the world. So this probably does relate a lot to what we were just talking about, but what would you say that your relationship is with confidence and like what areas do you feel really confident in and maybe some areas that you feel less confident in?
Yeah, I do think this one is a little bit more difficult because it is, it requires you getting out of your comfort zone and IJs definitely feel most comfortable in their comfort zone and probably have less of a desire to try all kinds of new things than some other personality types. But I do think that once something makes sense to me and I'm like, okay, that lines up with a goal that I have, this is where I want to go, that will give me the impetus to push out of my comfort zone and face whatever comes with that because that's something that lines up with what makes sense to me. I think being able to say that I am good at something or knowing what to bring to the world, that also is not something that comes as natural. And probably because that is also relating to even, you know, extroverted feeling and how are other people receiving me? And because that isn't my dominant function, that isn't operating in my inner world, you know, that is going to be a little more difficult.
Yeah. It sounds like, based on what you've just said and also our earlier conversations, that you probably find, and this may not be true for all people, but you probably find more comfort in your introverted functions, your introverted realm, than your extroverted functions. Is that true?
Yeah, I would agree. but also, I know that, you know, if I want to, you know, help people, you know, I want to help people with, you know, different challenges of understanding themselves better or relationships, I'm going to have to get outside of my comfort zone. And so, like I was saying, like, if I have a good reason for it, if I have a good goal, then that will help me have the energy and the courage to step outside of my comfort zone, of my inner world. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to think of it, that second function, your extroverted feeling, you definitely have some natural skill and ability there. But I think for most personality types, that second function has a little less confidence if you haven't gotten out into it very much, or for extroverts, into it. and so it does seem like people typically feel more confident in the way that I've described, in their natural orientation, the functions that are naturally oriented inward or outward, if they're an introvert or extrovert.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So which area of your life, whether it's related to a function or not, do you feel the most confident in?
I would say I definitely do feel confident in, like, one-on-one conversations with people, helping them to identify maybe challenges and where they're coming from for themselves, talking about, you know, whether it's personalities or emotions or, you know, relationships, and giving advice around that. That is something I do find energizing, and I have definitely developed more confidence around it just in my work with personalities and profiling. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you're doing that with people, is one of your goals to kind of help people feel good and to help them kind of like see their life in a positive light? Like, kind of what is your goal as you're doing that with people?
One of the first steps, I think, when I am talking with people is, like, especially talking about personalities, is getting to a place of self-compassion. It's understanding, okay, this is why I struggle with this area. This is why this area is difficult. But I think it is wanting people to have a more clear picture of what's going on for themselves, understanding maybe what's blocking them, kind of getting down to, you know, the root of an issue and then how to move forward on it. So, but I think using the extroverted feeling part of myself helps people, you know, it helps facilitate an environment where people can feel comfortable talking about that and noticing what comes up for them. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. That makes sense. So moving on to the fourth aspect of the framework, it's community. And I define this as having an intentional and supportive group of people who are on a similar path of working toward a purposeful or meaningful life, or maybe just a group of people who are also on a growth journey. And I believe it's pretty essential to have a support network of some sort. So I'm curious what this is like for you, and I'd love to see any connections that you see to community as an ISFJ or as an IJ type.
Yeah, this is definitely one that, you know, I value. And as I, you know, have grown and gotten older, like, I value it even more. I see very much the importance of it and the value of it. But getting there is definitely challenging, feels challenging. It can feel complicated. You know, you're working with other people, not just with, like, figuring yourself out. You have to, in order to have community, obviously it requires other people. And that gets you into the world of relationships and of relating to people and of how groups function. And again, it's that outer world. And it isn't always easy to create a community or find a community and then maybe find where you fit in it. That definitely is challenging, but it is something I value and desire.
Yeah. And so I think in season 3, episode 5, when we talked about community on the podcast here, I mentioned how I feel like this might be one of the more difficult aspects of the framework for a lot of people, simply because it does involve other people, as you've mentioned. And it's not something that you have really total control over. I mean, you can play your part, but there are a lot of other factors at play when you bring other people into it. So yeah, I think that's true, not just for you, for the reasons you mentioned as an introvert, but for a lot of people. But I think this epidemic that we are having of loneliness and people feeling disconnected and not having a support system, it's one reason why it's in the framework, because I feel like it's so important when we're trying to live a particular type of life to have people who are able to support us on that journey.
Absolutely. That is something that I think is important for everyone, and yet challenging. And there's many different factors that can come into that. And another thing I did think about for IJs in particular is that because it's a little harder for them to, or maybe not even as much of a desire for them to just go try a bunch of different, you know, areas or different groups, or, you know, go find this random book club, or, you know, go try all these different experiences where you might meet people or might find a community. I think that's another area that can make it challenging. Another reason IJs can find that challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I encourage to start with one person, you know, just keep your radar out for that one person that you can start. And then maybe you can both build a community from there. And I think a lot of times too, people think of community as a large group, and it doesn't have to be that. It can be a small group of supportive people who are really committed to each other as well.
Yeah, I feel like that's interesting you say that, because I do feel like that is always where I've found the most community is in pretty small groups. But it's great finding community wherever you can.
Yeah. And that brings us to the last part of the Authentic Life Framework, and that is consistency. And the way I define that is regularly and intentionally applying each of these C's that we've talked about and taking the action to create the life that you want. So I'm curious for you, if you're willing to share with us, where do you find yourself being the most consistent? And where do you struggle?
Yeah, I think one area I find consistency maybe easy is in smaller routines within my own week, my day, routines that support, you know, my energy or my goals. Those are definitely easier to stay consistent with, because I actually do find somewhat of a consistent routine enjoyable and grounding. So that is something I wouldn't say I struggle as much. And at least once I've gotten the habit established, I can still struggle with getting a habit established. Once I'm on it, you know, I don't struggle as much keeping that going. But where I would say I struggle more is probably in habits that relate to, you know, social life or getting out. I do find it very important to, you know, try to make arrangements with friends to go out and do things together. And that's something that it is important for me, but it takes energy. It takes focus. It's definitely something I have to keep working at doing. And then I think that when it comes to like long-term consistency with working towards like a goal that might be like, it might require 5-10 years to keep working at. That is something I wouldn't say comes as natural to me. And that's something I have noticed that, yeah, having a goal that's going to take a very long time to get there because it feels so far out in the future, that's a little bit harder for me. Breaking things down and having more goals that are maybe 3 months or a year or something like that feel more comfortable to me. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, maybe because those are more realistic or more kind of grounded in what could actually happen. Is that true for you?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also whenever I do think that far out in the future, it's like there's so many variables that could come in. You know, this is extroverted intuition. You know, there's a lot of different possibilities. And so it feels a little more tenuous to even be like, you know, I might start working at it, but like, you know, things might change and move till we get there. So yeah, I think I tend to prefer to work on goals that might be more within a year or two. So
yeah. Definitely some insecurity there of like, well, this could happen or that could happen or like, who knows what could happen, right?
Yeah. And it's also, it can definitely go down, you know, anxiety about that, but it can also just be this like just awareness that, you know, there are a lot of different variables we don't know, which I know this is speaking very much from my own functions, you know, and I think has a different feeling about that. But yeah, it's so super interesting just to see how we approach the future, even from our different functions.
Yeah, definitely. I think you mentioned also your relationship to routine, which is something that's often associated with introverted sensing, at least the ability to maintain a routine. At least you're an introvert, so kind of getting into that routine, if it's in the external world, might take a little bit more, but generally having more ease with maintaining it and feeling comfort around it too, I would imagine.
Yeah, that is something that, I mean, it reminds me of just my process of finding my type. That was something I thought, like, I didn't, like, I related to the IJ in general thing of just liking more of a comfort zone, but I don't feel like I have strict routines. And I think that varies a lot with SI dominance. Yeah. Some might have very detailed, strict routines. I feel like I have more of a routine that's a little more of a, like, I prefer to flow with it. But yes, it is still a routine and something that if I know kind of where the major markers are in my week or my day that I can orient myself by, that's definitely more comfortable.
Yeah. So you said flow with it. I'm really curious what that means, because I'm thinking the listener might hear that and be like, wait, what? She like goes with the flow? What does that mean? So when you say you like to flow with your routines, what does that mean?
Yeah, I don't think that I would describe myself as just someone that goes with the flow, not to the extent that, you know, EPs might, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's more because I definitely like to know what to expect. But then I also like within, you know, you might have your deadlines of like you need to be at a certain place by a certain time. But most of my day, I actually prefer to have a lot more like I can flow with what my energy needs are, or I can flow with what kind of I get inspired with, because I think this is where a little bit of the extroverted intuition comes in, is that I can get inspired to do something, all of a sudden get like really into a project that I hadn't even planned for the day. And that can be fun to do. And I prefer to go more where my energy feels like it's being pulled towards, or something that feels more energizing at that moment. So there's definitely kind of this balance of like still needing a certain structure, but I used to, when I was young, I used to not like these strict routines of like, you have to clean the house on this day of the week, and it doesn't matter if it's dirty or not. Yeah. It's kind of funny because, yeah. So I still think that there's like an individuality to that with each like SI Dom and what a routine might look like. But yeah, I still like to know what to expect. I like to know what is coming up in the week. And I do have a general framework that I run my day by.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say that those routines are a little more flexible if they're your own routines and you're in control of them? Because like having someone tell you need to clean the room or whatever this day, that's someone else's routine. That's not yours. So I would suspect there's still that control over what you can, I guess what you're willing to do within the boundaries you've set for yourself. Is that true?
Yes, I think that's what it is. It's like, you know, routines I've chosen or work for me is definitely something that, I like that. Routines that are put on me by outside forces are not as fun, but yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, with all things with personality type, you know, there's a sense of, you know, what you might be comfortable with routine might be far different than say an EP might be comfortable with routine. And what you might see as not really a routine at all, other people might see as more routinized. So I think there's also a self-perception involved with all of us and our functions and the way that we see it. When we compare it to other types, then we can really see the difference.
Yes, I think that's true. What people mean by routine definitely varies. And it varies a lot. And I can look around at, you know, back whenever I didn't think I was an SI dominant, I could see people who had stricter routines than me. You know, like, I'm not like that. But, you know, there's definitely a variety and what that looks like for us and the roles it serves. And even the phases of life we're in, I think, can play a role in that.
Yeah. Well, Andrea, that kind of brings us to the end of the questions that I had for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to say that we didn't get to, or something you feel would be important for people to know about you or your type?
Yeah, there is one or two things that I think could be interesting to end with, or just that I wanted to say. And one of those was that I thought whenever I first was considering SI, I thought I wasn't good enough at it. You know, I could see plenty of ways I wasn't organized, or areas in my house that aren't organized that I wish I had more organization in, or details. I can miss details too, you know, or I get overwhelmed by details, you know. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't my dominant function. It's just that I think SI is something that you can never be fully organized in all areas of the physical world. That's just, yeah. You can't control everything is basically what I'm saying. And then also I did care about it. And I think that's why I was noticing or I could think of areas maybe I wasn't doing well in. And then I think another thing I would say is just there's plenty of ISFJs out there that don't fit the stereotype and plenty of other personalities that don't relate to their stereotypes. So just curiosity is a very important value for me and something I think is really important on a type journey. Just staying open and staying curious and asking, being willing to ask the questions and follow them wherever they might go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that, because curiosity is also a value of mine. And I think it's so important, not just to find your accurate type, but to really understand yourself, going back to that consciousness piece, and to be able to make the changes that you want in life. You have to have an openness and be able to observe what's going on for you and see yourself in new ways throughout your life. I relate also to the understanding of like thinking I'm not that good at my dominant function, because, you know, I looked at other people and I'm like, oh, well, I see other people doing this and that, and I don't do those things. So I think that can sometimes cause people to reject their actual accurate type too. And they're just maybe not seeing it or translating it a little bit differently. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think that just because you do it one way doesn't mean, there's going to be variety within a type and within how you even use your functions.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for adding that. And thank you so much again for being here. And we're looking forward to having your husband, Seth, on the next episode as well. So super appreciate both of you. I know this was a little bit outside of your comfort zone, or maybe a lot, since I think, is this your first podcast episode interview that you've done?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So I really appreciate that. And I know that that's a big deal for someone who hasn't done it before. So I sincerely appreciate it.
It was a great experience, and you are a great host.
Thank you. All right. Take care.
Bye.
So that was my conversation with Andrea. And when I asked her to participate in this series, she, of course, took her time to consider it. And this was the first time that she has done something like this. So I was so, so appreciative of her willingness to say yes, not only because I really appreciate her, but also because of her type and the way that her type processes things. Doing new things like this can be pretty far outside of an ISFJ's comfort zone if they've never done it before. But I also felt like she could really help you understand some of the key things about IJs and to help you make some distinctions about INFJ, because so many people mistype as INFJ, including Andrea and I, and also to help you really understand the beautiful parts of being an ISFJ and of introverted sensing, which is a function that a lot of people don't really understand. I really loved how Andrea explained her main function, that introverted sensing function, and also the interplay that it has with her inferior function of extroverted intuition. If you have any questions about the things we've been talking about today, or anything about the framework or the 16 type system, I'd love for you to submit your questions to be answered on the podcast. Just go to hellopersonality.com/podcast, and on that page there, you'll see a little pop-up window where you can enter and submit your questions, and I'll answer those on the final episode of this season, which will be episode 12. But first, before we wrap up the season, we do have one more interview in which you'll meet an EP type who also happens to be Andrea's husband. That's coming up next in episode 11. I'll see you then. Take care.